Well, last week we were, or actually we're in a section that's chapter 9 through the middle of 11. Man does not know what will happen is kind of that broad topic we used last week. Just that sense of, you know, there's not this certainty of what the future holds, and we like to think there is. The section is marked by some phrases, no man knows, and you do not know. And so it's dealing with our inability to predict what will happen, and whether that's good or bad, and whether, you know, the works of a person are going to fail or succeed. Last week we looked at the first 10 verses of chapter 9, saying no one knows what will happen to him. This week, it's no one knows whether his wisdom will succeed, and for the next through chapter 10. And so last week, there was some focus on the righteousness, looking at the fool and righteous or weak and righteous. This time, it looks more in the sense of wisdom. The first 10 verses in chapter 9 began with the statement that the righteous and the wise are subject the same uncertainties, there's an uncertain future. The following verses, or that was in verse 1, but then 2 through 10, Solomon discussed the fact that with regard to the righteous, that's in contrast to the wicked, there's just not that certainty of what's going to happen. And now in the last part of chapter 9 and going into chapter 10, shows that the wise also are subject to these same uncertainties, this uncertain future, so to speak. Chapter 9, and beginning in verse 11, we're looking in the sense of wisdom is subject to that uncertainty. Or more than it is wisdom, it's more in the sense of, you know, the wise person, but even the person practicing wisdom, there's and Solomon would say it's good to practice wisdom. You know, it's better to be wise, better to be righteous. But it doesn't change the fact that there are these uncertainties. Verse 11, he says, 11 and 12, I again saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, and the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability, for time and chance overtake them all. Moreover, man does not know his time, like fish caught in a treacherous net and birds trapped in a snare. So the sons of men are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. So there's that sense of, there are just these uncertainties. And it's not saying that it's not good to do things or to pursue these things. There's just that sense that it doesn't always work out that way. You know, the race is not always won by the swift runner. Generally, that's true. But, you know, there was that one, not really remember where the person was, but the person that, was it in a marathon? The person that cramped up and fell and in a Olympics a couple of times ago, and it seems like, I can't remember, you know, there's been several of those that'll happen, and it seems like, that was one. And there's another one where I think a parent, dad came out of the stands to help somebody. Jim Ryan, going way back, at that time period, the greatest miler, you know, just went to the Olympics when he was 16 years old as an alternate, but he never won an Olympics. When he was, in the period, I think it was in the Mexico Olympics, when he should have won, forgot what happened. He got tripped or got sick. But anyway, you just have these things that happen. So, you know, it's just saying, you know, there's not that certainty. Even though we can normally say that these are the ways it happen, there are these things that don't happen. Moves on, he says that the wisdom may be unrewarded at times because of somebody's negligence. In 13, he says, Also, I came to see as wisdom under the sun, and it impressed me. There was a small city with few men in it, and a great king came to it, surrounded it, and constructed large siege works against it. And those, best I can tell, are perhaps forts or various outpost kinds of things to make the attack with. But there was found in it a poor wise man, and he delivered the city by his wisdom. Yet no one remembered that poor man. So I said, wisdom is better than strength, but the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his works are not heeded. So here's this wisdom, but he delivered them, but nobody really appreciated after the fact. It's in that sense of, we live in a time today when, it's almost that the valuable question is, do you know the latest, rather than do you know the truth? We're into what is the latest news, not necessarily is something true. And it's somewhat similar here. This man delivered them, but there's no real appreciation. I guess at that moment you can assume they appreciated them, but no real appreciation. That there's that sense also that following that, wisdom's value can be nullified by a little folly. In once again, in 17, it says, the words of the wise heard in quietness are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than the weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Dead flies makes a perfumer's oil stink, so a little foolishness is weightier than the wisdom and honor. And so he's just looking at these different things of saying, wisdom at times has its limitations, not because wisdom has limitations, but because of people or circumstances, who's in authority, the appreciation of it. Or just in that sense that, the way things work out. In the chapter 10, the first 2 through 7, it's looking at wisdom's value may be nullified by a ruler's caprice. The sense of an impulsiveness of somebody may, some ruler's impulsive behavior or unmotivated actions, may nullify somebody's wisdom. It says, a wise heart, verse 2, chapter 10, verse 2, a wise man's heart directs him toward the right. And I think this contrast from right and left is probably the sense of right is in the sense of prudence and wisdom, and left is, a little more carelessness. A wise man's heart directs him toward the right, but the foolish man's heart directs him toward the left. Even when the fool walks along the road, his senses is lacking, and he demonstrates to everyone that he is a fool. So he's looking at this guy and says, this is just, one of the Proverbs kind of statements here. Just the fool is such that people know he's a fool just by the way that he conducts himself. If the ruler's temper rises against you, do not abandon your position, because a composure allays great offenses. That is, it offsets it. It reduces it. It subverts it. How's that read? Okay. And there's a proverb that, how's it go? The soft answer turns away wrath. And I guess my one illustration on that was, and it's pretty hard for most time to be very calm when somebody's upset. But when we were moving from Dallas, when I was in seminary, we had this truck, I don't know if we had loaded that night, we're loading in the morning. I just know we had it at night, and so because of parking, I just backed it all the way as far as I could to leave it right in front of our house, and which But we were like on the last apartment, which meant it stuck out, you know, further than it's the parking, designed parking spaces. But it's not an issue where we were as far as anybody getting around. And in the middle of the night, I heard somebody beating on this truck, out there yelling, beating on this truck. Went out there, and this guy was yelling at me and cussing at me, you know, because this thing was parked illegally and anyway, I just started talking to him real calmly, and it turned out he was just really frustrated because his car had gotten towed for not being parked right. So he was just, you know, like, you know, sometime that week he's usually mad. But anyway, he just kind of calmed down, and, you know, it turned out he really wasn't upset at me. He was just still upset that they towed his car. But, but you know, this one's not so much in the sense of, like the proverb talking about somebody being angry like this, but this is looking at the ruler. And so... You know, often here with Solomon, it's not just a person, but it's looking at those positions of authority that can not just cause some a conflict in your life, but that could really undo your life. And so here, yes, it's and that would be the, you know, what's saying here, because the word allays means, like I said, to subvert or to reduce. So it's been that sense of it's going to reduce it. It says, there is an evil I have seen under the sun, like an error which goes forth from the ruler. Folly is set in many exalted places, which rich men sit in humble places. So you have, so he's here, things are not what they should be. You know, folly is set in the exalted places, while rich men sit in the humble places. And the kind of the implication here, understanding, is that the rich, the status of being rich would imply that they're wise. And so that's where that contrast is coming in. It's not, you know, you could look around and say, well, there are rich people that aren't wise. But that's the general theme that he's operating off from here, I think. And so it's that contrast. But yet you have a rich person that's not in a position of authority or to rule. And you've got this fool that's in an exalted place. Verse 7, I have seen slaves riding on horses and princes walking like slaves on the land. So he's just saying sometimes things get out of balance. They're not what they should be. And so he's just looking at that sense of wisdom. Wisdom may be, in that sense, kind of undone or not that it becomes, well, actually I shouldn't say undone. It's not like it becomes not wise or that it's pointless or it's useless. But wisdom is no guarantee, is what he's saying. The wisdom, just as righteousness, doesn't guarantee that life is going to work a certain way. And it doesn't guarantee that you're somehow going to know what the future is. You don't know what the future is, but he would always come back and say it's better to be righteous, it's better to be wise. But there are these limitations. 8 through 11, he's looking at wisdom's value. Is maybe nullified by improper timing. And so here he says, he gives, I think, there's five kind of examples here. He who digs a pit may fall into it. Well, you know, that's one of the hazards of digging a pit. You done that, Rob?
Yes.
So, wasn't even a good pit. Well, that may be. And a serpent may bite him who breaks through a wall. According to Keith, it may bite you a week later. That's what Susie was saying. Some guy came home from, a camping trip and started unpacking his bags and stuck his hand in the bag. And he who quarries stones may be hurt by them. Well, you know, if you're cutting rocks, they might fall on you. He who splits logs may be endangered by them. You see this on Holmes Funny's videos all the time. Somebody chopping them, you know, hit that axe down on that piece of wood and comes flying up and hits them in the head. It looks pretty funny on Holmes' video, but it's not funny to the one that got hit. And so, you know, he's not saying that you shouldn't do these things. And it's not even saying that if one's not careful, you know, or one that these things are always going to happen, because you can, you know, you can keep most of those things from happening, but, you know, there's a wisdom that helps. But there's also, you know, even when a person is wise, you know, that little bit of improper timing causes things not to work. You know, when we, you generally could be wise, but you just make that one mistake, that one little thing there. If he acts, let's see, and moving on from 10, within this, it's kind of the same thing about this time. He says, if the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. If the serpent bites before being charmed, there is no profit for the charmer. So there's that sense of, you know, that you know, when you the value of wisdom, you know, in these things, that if they're applied, then it has this value. But it has to do with that timing. If you sharpen your axe, then you have to exert less energy to chop the tree. If you're a snake charmer and your timing isn't right, and you grab the snake and you get bit, then you have these problems. But it's, you know, it's using, you know, the one metaphor or proverb we kind of understand about the axe. The one about the snake charmer is hard to understand because we don't relate to it. We don't see it. You know, it's very far, you know, outside of our. Well, that's how you get them out of your suitcase. So there's that. So through these proverbs, shown that wisdom is valuable in dangerous and difficult tasks. Its value can be nullified, however, by improper timing. You know, if not applied in that sense. In 12 through 20, you know, it's really moving into another section, as we saw before, that no one really knows whether wisdom will, you know, allow him to succeed, will be successful in a sense. This next section, 12 through 20, is criticisms is risky in view of one's ignorance of the future, because you're not positive of the future. There's that problem there. In verse 12, it says, words from the mouth of a wise man are gracious, while the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of his talking is folly, and the end of it is wicked madness. Yet the fool multiplies words. No man knows what will happen, and who can tell him what will come after him? The toil of a fool so wearies him that he does not even know how to go to a city. Woe to you, O land, whose king is a lad, and whose princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, whose king is of nobility, and whose princes eat at the appropriate time for strength and not for drunkenness. Through indolence the rafters sag, and through slackness the house leaks. Men prepare a meal for enjoyment, and wine makes life merry, and money is the answer to everything. Furthermore, in your bedchamber do not curse a king, and in your sleeping rooms do not curse a rich man, for a bird of the heavens will carry the sound, and the winged creature will make the matter known. So in this section you have this, that, you know, multiplying words, and, you know, becomes this self-destructive view, you know, in the sense that there's an ignorance of the future. And then he talks about, you know, one needs to be careful about talking about, you know, leaders, because they may find out. And you have had that problem there. We might think of it almost in that regard. You know, here he says, first, you know, he says, beginning to end, you know, from the start to the finish. It's, you know, so several times here he uses these words that, you know, one extreme, one end, and one to the other, and kind of like when we say from the east to the west, and here he's talking about from the beginning to the end, you know, this all-encompassing sense. He also says, you know, this sense of, you have these people that are leading. You know, they're indulgent leadership. He says the toil of the fool so wearies him that he does not even know how to go to a city. That we might say it in terms of that guy's so stupid he doesn't know to get in out of the rain. This is can't even find his way home. This fool, but yet he's saying in here also that the king is a lad, verse 16, whose prince is feasting in the morning, and so this very indulgent behavior. So the one ruling is this, indulgent kid. And he says, in contrast, blessed are you, O land, whose king is of nobility, whose princes eat at the appropriate time, for strength, not for drunkenness. And so you have this sense of sometimes governments are abusive because they have fools running them. Well, I think it's probably, or maybe it's in the sense of the, that sense of the alcohol in the morning, maybe, because there is that contrast in verse 17 about for strength and not for drunkenness, so the appropriateness of wine, or whether, it's for celebration or that. Maybe it's just always a party atmosphere. Everything's a party. I'm not whether or not he's talking about normal 7 o'clock breakfast or he's talking about 2 o'clock, I'm not positive. We have a lot more of a concept of staying up really, really late because we have electric lights than they would have at this time, even though they had ways of having light. I suspect that there's part of that, but there just that sense of looking at the wisdom, the criticism, and then it comes to here at the end, and it's saying you need to be careful about criticizing the rich or the powerful. A little bird may hear it, and may tell somebody. You look today, and it's in that sense of don't put anything in an email that you don't want everybody to know. Of course, you could be like that mayor of that town that has her MySpace page or one of those kind of pages that had some provocative pictures on it or something, and she's like, "Well, it's MySpace." It's like that's. Oh, but her statement was, "It's MySpace, so it's yeah, it's mine. You shouldn't. It's off limits to you if you don't like it or something." It's, Yeah. So, there it's in that sense of saying things. It's kind of interesting here because I think we have that tendency to think that like Solomon would be saying, Proverbs would be saying, or integrity says you stand up and say what's right. You're not afraid of anybody. And I don't know that Solomon would necessarily disagree with that, but I don't know that so often when people are making statements that they're really wanting to take on those issues. So if you're wanting to confront the king, that's one thing. But when you're just making these statements, and remember, some of these are a little hard for us to understand because we don't live, we've never lived where there was this absolute authority that just your head's gone because I heard you said. We have this sense of process of. Said something. Yeah. Well, even saying that, that's a crime just to say that. One of the few that we can have. Yeah. Yeah, it's on tape. Yeah. And it's going to be posted on the internet. We're really good here. So, but you have yes that sense of. But I think here is that sense of recognizing the limitations and that he's talking about. In chapter 11, in the first few verses, it's, you know, following this, there's still this sense of uncertainty, but he's here it's saying, work diligently despite ignorance of the future. So all of these have to do somewhat with the future. We don't really know exactly what's going to happen, but as the last one, last week, you know, ends, kind of this one ends with these positive exhortations about, but you need to apply yourself. You need to live life. You need to enjoy life. Here's, there's, you know, working diligently, even though you don't know about the future. He says, cast your bread on the surface of the waters. Now, that sounds like just going out to the lake and throwing your bread out there for the ducks to eat, but it's really a phrase that's looking at shipping. So you would put your bread, you put your grain on the ship, and it would you know, go out, you know, in the sense of productive trading. So this is a maritime trading terminology. For you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to seven or even to eight, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. So that sense of diversity is what he's saying here in investment. So both of these are, you know, one, the first one is in the sense of investing. The second one is in being diversified in investing, because you don't know where the misfortunes are going to come. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth, and whether a tree falls toward the south or toward the north, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. I love that one. I mean, you know, and if you can have an influence on a tree when it's falling, then you can have an influence. But once it fell, you know. And depending on the size of it, you're not going to, you know, you may not move it. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. You know, there is that sense if you're going to harvest that you don't do harvesting while it's raining. But if you're just always looking and say, "Well, I think it might rain today," then you wait until the next day, and you go, "Oh, it may rain today." You never get anything done, and so there's that sense of you cannot just not work because you don't know, you know, you do not know what the future is. Verse 5, just as you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. So there's that sense of, well, it might rain, it might do this, the wind may blow, and if I'm out there planting my seeds, which, you know, were done differently than we would do it today, but just scattering seeds and the wind's going to blow it away. But you don't know these things. You don't know how the wind even comes about, and you don't know how bones are formed. Now, at this point, we might have more insights to some of those things than they did at that point. But he's saying, you know, just looking back at this sovereign God, you don't know the activity of God. You don't know all these things are going to happen. So if you just say, "I'm not going to do this until I'm guaranteed this," you won't do anything. You'll never do anything. Sow your seed in the morning and do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed, or whether both of them alike will be good. So he's saying, you know, sow in the morning, sow in the evening. You don't know if it's going to be better because you sowed in the morning or better because you sowed in the evening. In reality, you don't know if either one of them are going to work. And so he comes to this sense of, you know, be diligent, even though we don't know about the future. So your wisdom is not a guarantee that you're going to be successful, though he's definitely not saying follow the path of fool. He's very negative about that. Just saying there's not a guarantee. Just as righteousness doesn't guarantee it, wisdom doesn't guarantee that it's going to work out this way. And then he, in the middle of this, he talks about, you know, the area of, you know, criticizing is, you know, you have to be careful because you don't know about the future. And And so he brings these areas of wisdom in here of saying, just as righteousness is not a guarantee of what will happen because you don't know what's going to happen, even if you're wise, you don't know what's going to happen, but you still live your life under the direction of wisdom and diligently working. And so there is that, you know, once again, that real sense of pessimism in Ecclesiastes of you don't know what's going to happen. You know, here he's not talking about everything is futile like he has at some point, but there is that sense of, I want those guarantees. Why are we so attracted to those theologies that come along that provide such promises? Because they give us some certainty to hang on to, and we like that. So if you're told that if you give $100, you will get back $1,000, now that's something you can... I understand how it works. And if it works that way, that's, you know...
Understand how it's supposed to work.
But it's not presented that way. It's presented, it does work, you know. And if it doesn't, it's because you didn't have faith, not because the principle is not there. But that gives you things to hold on to. And so we, you know, we long for those things. There was on some TV show a few weeks ago, had to do with somebody's missing shows. I can't remember what the show was about. Just know that a part of it, as they got in it, had to do with this person that was fraudulently buying houses. He's telling these people that they were about to be foreclosed on, that here's the way that we can escape this is you sign it over to our name, and then we can do these things, and then we, you know, you stay in the house, and then we give it back to you. And then the guy was selling the house. There's, you know, a news item out now. There's like 19 people in California have been arrested for doing exactly that. And these were, and these people were actually in a mortgage company. But they were doing this exactly what they were doing. They were going to people and saying, put the name and the title in our name. You pay rent, and we'll do all this, and then you get your house back. And then they sold the house. And you know, why do we fall for things like that? You know, yeah, there's a sense of naiveness, you know, obviously. And there's also the sense of that the person that's pulling the scam is very gifted at it, obviously. But there's also that sense that we long for those fixes, those absolutes. And so, yeah, there's a pessimism to this, but there's also that realism here that he's saying, I've observed these things, and just because you're wise, just because you're righteous, doesn't mean you will escape every calamity. And in fact, at times, we would look and say, the fool got out of it and the wise man didn't. You know, there have been some studies that have shown that drunk people actually are not injured in automobile accidents to the same degree people that aren't drunk. Now, there's something wrong with that. With a moral God, there's something wrong with that. Isn't there? Shouldn't be. You know, they should always be decapitated or something. So we send this message. But, you know, it doesn't always work that way. And so Solomon is pointing those things out to us. But yet, once again, he ends with this sense of be diligent. You know, you cannot sit around and say, because I don't know what's going to happen, I'm not going to do anything. Rather, diversify and diligently work. You know, so, if it's cloudy, sow until it starts raining. If you heard the wind's going to blow, get out there and, you know, sow until the wind starts to blow. And so that's where he's going. Well, any thoughts or comments or ideas or...
Thank you.
I don't know if I'd want to be so strong as saying disagree. And it somewhat depends, you know, if you have an annotated Bible, they'll do that at times. They'll change it, depending on where you are. The, you know, our chapter divisions are generally accurate, but they're not based upon anything original. They're based upon where, you know, the Vulgate, I think it's the Vulgate, you know, most of our stuff ends up going back to the King James at some point, where they, you know, where the editors put in those. And if, you know, when you look at most commentaries on especially on books like this, if you look at, you know, two or three of them, very seldom do they ever divide all their arguments the same. So mine probably reflect more of, you know, the primary commentator I was following, as opposed to, you know, Ryrie or just the divisions in the chapters. Well, if you have an annotated, they'll be different. I mean, if you have a study Bible, I mean, the chapter divisions will be the same. And in, like, in the New American Standard, you can tell by dark print where chapter titles occur. The NIV, it's usually by paragraphs where they put it. And usually those follow the same pattern. But like in Ryrie, for instance, includes chapter 11. He's got 11:1 through 12:8 in his outline, and then in his spacing between 11:10 and 12:1, there's no space break. So he just keeps that flowing, and then he makes a break between 8 and 9. Those are very common among study Bibles, but. Yeah. Well, yes, and it does put those together on for, you know, where you do, and those are always the ongoing challenge with that. Any other thoughts, sir? What do we have? Prayer requests.